Chapter 16. Through the ether.
What's that, Washington? Asked Mark, as the colored cook put something on the lad's plate.
It looks like chicken.
It tastes like chicken, added Jack, after making a test.
It'm chicken, declared Washington.
I roasted some of my fowls and put them in the cold storage room.
I was pretty swat there weren't any chickens on that red planet where we're going.
Probably not, answered Professor Henderson.
It was a good idea, Washington.
Pass me some, please.
Ain't Mr. Rauman coming to dinner?
Not now, answered the scientist.
He will stay in the pilot house until I relieve him.
It seems mighty queer to be sitting down to a meal, and all the while we're shooting along at 50 miles a second, remarked Jack.
Yes, it doesn't seem as if we were moving at all, agreed Mark.
Indeed, the dining room of the Annihilator was a very comfortable place, though the space was rather contracted, due to the shape of the projectile and the necessity for carrying a great quantity of stores.
The living room served as the place for serving the meals, which were prepared in a sort of galley or kitchen off the engine room.
It's like eating in a dining car on a railroad train, observed Andy Suds, only it is more steady.
No curves, and nothing like that.
Do you like it?
Inquired Mr. Henderson.
Well, it's nice, of course, and there isn't any better cook than Washington, but, to tell the honest truth, I've eaten with more satisfaction when I made a fire in the woods and boiled coffee and fried bacon.
I'm sort of hampered for elbow room.
Still, it isn't as crowded as when we all got in the cylinder and were shot up from the center of the earth on the geyser, commented Jack.
That's right, came from Mark.
Professor Henderson, having finished his meal, went to the pilot house to relieve Mr. Rauman.
The latter paid a visit to the engine room before sitting down.
Is everything all right? Asked Jack.
The motor is working like a charm, was the reply.
I shall soon expect you boys to take your turn at guiding the projectile through space.
I want to wait until we get into the ether, said Jack.
We'll go faster then.
It's something wonderful to steer a machine going 100 miles a second.
I should say so. 6,000 miles a minute, observed Mark.
The fastest automobile would seem like a snail compared to it.
Yes, and we are going faster than some stars, added Mr. Rauman.
But there isn't anything to see, objected Andy.
Now, I like scenery when I travel.
Well, it's something to always be in sight of the sun, put in Mark.
Yes, and when we get to Mars there'll be plenty to look at, suggested Jack.
We can see the rings around it.
Mars hasn't any rings around it, retorted Mark, who had a good memory for scientific facts.
That's Saturn you're thinking of.
Oh, yes, so it is.
But hasn't Mars got a lot of moons, or something like that?
Seems to me, I've heard about them.
Mars has two moons, or satellites, stated Mr. Rauman, who had studied much about the red planet,
but they do not amount to much compared to our moon.
One is about 10,000 miles from Mars, and is called Deimos, and the other, which is but 1,600 miles from the planet, is called Phobos by astronomers.
And how far away is our moon from the Earth? Asked Mark.
It varies from about 252,000 miles to 221,000 miles.
Then I should think the people on Mars would get more light from their two moons, so much closer to them, than we do from our moon, so far off, remarked Jack.
No, they don't, at least as far as we know.
The one closest to them gives about 1/60th of our moonlight, and the outer one about 1/1200th,
so you see that's not much.
A peculiar feature of the inner moon is that it makes a revolution about Mars in 7 hours,
or more than 3 times in a day, and it rises in the west and sets in the east,
while the moon farthest away from the planet rises just as our moon does, in the east, but it comes up only once in about 5 days.
Golly! Exclaimed Washington, who had been listening.
A funny place.
Two little moons, one shooting around you 3 times a day, and the other one circling around once in 5 days.
Lande Massey.
Yes, you'll have to be careful, Wash, cautioned Jack. If you go out for a moonlight walk, you may have to come home in the dark.
Then I ain't going, and when I do, I'll take a lantern.
Mr. Rauman told the boys much more of interest about Mars, and then, taking them to the engine room, he showed them something about adjusting the motors and other machinery, though he did not disclose the secret of the power.
Now we'll go to the pilot house, and I'll show you some things there, he concluded.
They found Professor Henderson at the wheel.
Is everything all right? Asked the German.
I think so, answered the scientist. This airship doesn't behave exactly as the ones I constructed before, but it seems to be moving along at good speed.
Yes, we have increased our rate of progress, stated Mr. Rauman.
We are now going nearly 55 miles a second.
That rate we shall be beyond the atmosphere sooner than I expected.
The remainder of that day they kept on shooting forward toward Mars, nothing occurring to mark the passage of time, save the monotonous ticking of various clocks.
There was nothing to be seen, save the glare of sunlight outside.
Aren't we ever going to meet with World, or a wandering star, or something? Asked Jack rather discontentedly.
There's no telling when we may pass near one, said Mr. Rauman.
S'posen we hit one? Asked Washington, his eyes becoming large with fear.
There's not much danger.
My instruments will warn me when we approach any of the heavenly bodies, and we can steer clear of them.
The only things we have to fear will be comets, and their orbits are so irregular that there is no telling when we may get in the path of one.
What will happen when we do? Asked Mark.
Mr. Rauman shrugged his shoulders.
We'll do our best to get out of the way, he said.
And if we can't?
Well, I guess that will be the end of us.
This was a new danger, and one the boys had not thought of before. But the German scientist did not seem to attach much importance to the matter.
They traveled on for 2 days, nothing of moment occurring.
The Annihilator, true to its name, fairly ate up space, though they were still far from Mars.
It was on the morning of the third day. The two boys and Professor Henderson were in the pilot house, and Mr. Rauman was in the engine room, adjusting the Ethereum motor, for he expected to shortly put it in operation.
Suddenly Jack, who was looking at one of the instruments on the front wall, uttered a cry.
What's the matter? Asked Mark.
We're approaching something, was the answer.
Heavenly body. Look at that indicator.
The hand or pointer on a peculiar dial was moving violently to and fro.
Call Mr. Rauman, suggested the professor.
I don't know just what to do.
Mr. Rauman hurried into the pilot house, gave a quick glance at the indicator, and exclaimed,
We are nearing a planetoid, or, as some call them, an asteroid.
Is there any danger? Asked Mark.
No.
Fortunately, the instrument gave us timely warning.
Simply steer to avoid it.
It is a small, unnamed planet flying around in space.
There are many of them.
Can we go close enough to it to see it? Asked Jack, who was a curious lad.
I think so. I'll try it, anyhow.
Mr. Rauman made some adjustments to the levers and wheels controlling the motor, and by turning on a little more power on one side of the projectile, caused it to swerve to one side.
A few minutes later he called out,
Look from the window.
The boys gazed out. They saw that they were rushing past a dark mass that looked as if it was composed of heaped up, black rocks, piled in fantastic masses, with great chasms here and towering peaks there.
It seemed to be several miles in diameter, and looked like a great ball.
A small, dead world, remarked Mr. Henderson.
I suppose our planet will be like that sometime.
I hope not by the time we get back to it, commented Jack.
I wonder if we will ever get back to Earth again.
It was the first time he had expressed any doubt on this score.
There's the last of the dead planet, Mark cried.
They looked to see the black mass vanish into space.
Yes, and we have reached the end of the atmosphere, suddenly cried Mr. Rauman as he glanced at a dial.
Now we will begin to travel through ether.
He adjusted some levers, turned two wheels, threw over electric switches, and there came a perceptible jar to the projectile.
What was that? Asked Jack.
I have disconnected the atmospheric motor, explained the German, and the Ethereum one is now working. We are shooting along through ether at the rate of 100 miles a second.
Through space to Mars by Rockwood.